This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Monday, February the 11th. I'm Angela Denning. Southeast Alaska's upcoming commercial tanner crab fishery could bring another high harvest, while the Golden Creek King crab fishery harvest will likely be low. Both fisheries open up tomorrow. Here's more on that. It looks like it could be another good year for tanner crab in Southeast. State managers estimate there's a lot of mature male crab that the fishery targets, about 6.62 million pounds of them. That's a slight decrease from last year, but 2018 saw the highest biomass ever predicted. Last year's fishery brought in about 1.2 million pounds by 73 permit holders. The fishery was valued at $3.68 million at the docks, with an average price of $3.07 per pound. Several factors go into the price, but it's heavily influenced by the economy in Japan, which is one of Southeast's main markets for tanner. Managers have been expecting good numbers going into this season. Joe Stratman is the lead crab biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Southeast. He says they collected data from 12 survey areas, which showed good results.
Generally, it gets better as you go to the north. A lot of the healthy and above average areas are north of Petersburg, north of Southern Admiralty.
The state uses a formula that scores each survey area for several factors, including catch per unit for size and sex, and the quality of the crab's egg clutches.
We had one that was healthy, and that was a Stevens Pass up around Juneau. We had six areas that were above average, four that were moderate. We didn't have any that scored below average, and we had one that had a poor score, and that was Thomas Bay here near Petersburg.
Biologists with Fish and Game have been tracking tanner crab in Southeast since the late 1990s. Stratman says the population has definitely seen its ups and downs since then.
In the late 1990s, we saw some large harvests and some large estimates of abundance from the survey. And then things cooled down a little bit in the 2000s. The mid-2000s was sort of a low point in harvest and survey results. And kind of what we've seen over the last few years are things kind of trending up again to levels similar to the late 1990s.
Managers won't know how long the fishery will be until it begins, because the length depends on the number of fishermen registered, and they can register up to the start. But normally, the fishery lasts about a week. Some tanner fishermen will also be harvesting golden king crab. That fishery coincides with tanner, but on a much smaller scale. Last year, 13 permit holders brought in 60,000 pounds of golden king, also known as brown king crab. That's way below the 10-year average of 430,000 pounds. The species has been declining for several years. Biologists aren't sure what to expect long-term. They don't survey the crab and rely on harvest data to manage the fishery. Stratman says harvests have fluctuated a lot over the decades since the fishery began in the 1970s.
There was a big peak in the 80s, and then there was a collapse in the 1990s, and the fishery improved in the late 1990s and stayed at relatively high levels through the 2000s. And since about 2011, things have been declining.
The state manages the golden king crab fishery in seven areas, and each has its own harvest level. The northern management area will not open, but the east central management area, which was closed last year, will. Combined, the guideline harvest level for all open areas is 76,000 pounds. Last year, Golden King brought about $10.10 a pound at the docks, with an overall fishery value of $660,000. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning. Permit holders can register to fish up until the start, so managers are not planning on announcing the exact season length until tomorrow morning before the noon start of the fisheries. Announcements will be made in press releases and aired on NOAA Weather Radio and on VHF Channel 16. A former Ketchikan High School teacher pleaded guilty last Wednesday to sexual abuse of a minor through a plea agreement that calls for him to serve 6 years in jail. Doug Edwards was charged last spring with six counts of sexual abuse of a minor for groping a then 14-year-old girl's chest at the school, at his home, and at the church where he was a pastor. The plea agreement consolidates those six charges into one Class B felony. Superior Court Judge William Carey explained what that means to Edwards and others in the courtroom.
So what this does is consolidate all six into one conviction. However, he basically is admitting the conduct in all of them. And the fact that there, even though there's one conviction, it looks like the fact that other acts are multiple acts are consolidated into this makes the sex offender registration requirement lifetime as opposed to 15 years.
Yes.
After he's served his time in prison, Edwards will be required to register as a sex offender and update that registration every 3 months for the rest of his life. The plea agreement called for a sentence of 18 years with 12 suspended. That leaves 6 to serve, but with good time, Edwards could be released after 4 years. The plea agreement also calls for 10 years of probation and for Edwards to provide restitution to the victim. Judge Carey explained at length the rights that Edwards would be giving up by pleading guilty and not proceeding with a jury trial. Edwards responded that he understood. Carey then took Edwards' plea.
All right, then. Sir, with respect to the consolidated count 1 and the charge of sexual abuse of a minor in the second degree, how do you plead to that charge?
Guilty, Your Honor.
Carey accepted Edwards' guilty plea and ordered a pre-sentencing report. A sentencing hearing is scheduled for April 18th in Ketchikan Superior Court. In the meantime, Edwards was ordered to report to jail last Wednesday afternoon. Researchers in Sitka have been looking at the impacts of microplastics on local shellfish. As Catherine Rose reports, their findings illustrate a possible connection between microplastics in butter clams and household laundry.
Helen Dangle sits in her office at the Sitka Tribe of Alaska Resource Protection Building. The fisheries biologist is dressed like one. She wears a white lab coat and looks at slides through a microscope. She's got a sample from a butter clam in Stargaven Estuary. I peer closely around the grains of sand.
Oh, I see the pearl.
Oh, those are 3 of them there.
Oh, yeah, I see them. They're tiny. Pearls about a millimeter in size. So small you can barely see them with the naked eye. So probably not worth much. But that's not what she's trying to show me.
Oh, I see a hair. Is that a microplastic?
It is. As the name suggests, they're minuscule pieces of plastic debris littering the world's oceans. Consumed by fish and wildlife, microplastics could have unhealthy consequences. The research into health effects from ingesting microplastics remains inconclusive, but nobody's saying it's good. That's one reason why Dangle and fellow researchers have spent the past year collecting samples of 2 species, butter clams and blue mussels, looking for microplastics in the mollusks. In partnership with Mount Edgecombe High School and University of Alaska Southeast, they collected samples from Stargaven Estuary in 2018. There's been a nationwide backlash against one major source of plastic pollution, plastic bags. And cities in Alaska like Wasilla, Soldotna, and Cordova have banned single-use plastic bags. Anchorage moved to ban them last year, though the rollout's been delayed. Sitka flirted with the idea of a fee on plastic bags, though the assembly postponed action indefinitely. Dangle explains that plastic bags do break down over time, but they don't really go away.
The idea is that most microplastics are from larger pieces that are floating around in our environment. Yeah, it is plastic bags and bottles that break down.
After researchers collected the shellfish, they returned to the lab, measured the clams and mussels, and then separated their bodies from their shells.
What we did was we used potassium hydroxide to chemically digest the soft body tissue.
They put the flasks in an incubator shaker for 24 hours to accelerate the chemical digestion process.
The samples, once they're incubated, they turn into a yellowish fluid, and we filter those out onto small filter circles that we can examine under a microscope.
They discovered that in both samplings, all of the butter clams and most of the mussels contained microplastics. Dangle says that the majority of the microplastics they found weren't plastic fragments, they were microfibers. They look like tiny hairs, synthetic hairs. So where are they coming from? Dangle says they're likely coming from synthetic fabrics like polyester or nylon. And how did they get into the ocean? It could be Sitka's dirty laundry.
When we wash our clothes here in Sitka, where does it go? It goes from the laundry wastewater into our wastewater system, through our pipes. It goes over to the sewage treatment plant, and it's treated, but you know, they're not able to filter out those really small fibers, so it just goes right into our ocean.
Dangle says there are products on the market that collect microfibers to reduce pollution in the water supply. Microplastics are found everywhere, in both farmed fish and wild stocks caught in Alaska. She says it's not a reason to stop eating wild seafood.
If we stop eating our local salmon, are you going to go buy a steak that's higher in saturated fat and not as good for you?
But with Alaskan seafood marketed as some of the most pristine wild-caught in the world, the research showing microplastics in shellfish is troubling. The next step, Dangle says, is to examine other species, like salmon. But for now, she hopes her research will make people more mindful about synthetic fibers, because microplastic pollution that goes down the drain doesn't really go away. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
A group committed to helping Juneau's most vulnerable residents is now much closer to doubling the size of its subsidized housing complex in Lemon Creek. The Juneau Housing First Collaborative announced last week that it has been awarded more than $2.5 million in grants and loans for the project that will add a new wing to the existing building. Phase one of the project opened to 32 permanent residents in 2017. Maria Lovichuk is the director of the Glory Hall Homeless Shelter and the coordinator for the project, and she says they hope the expansion will be ready by next year.
Well, we're really hoping to start the work, be all permitted and ready to go in April, and they think that's realistic.
The collaborative effort will turn to the state and federal funding to raise another $1 million, and the Juneau Community Foundation will lead local efforts to raise $650,000 from the community. Lovichuk says they originally hoped to build 56 apartments in the complex, but decided to split the project into two phases when there wasn't enough money to begin with.
Phase two gets us closer to where we originally wanted to be, with like slightly more units, because it seemed to be possible.
The Housing First complex provides a number of services to residents and a clinic that is open to the community. A study by the University of Alaska Fairbanks researchers found that in the first 6 months after opening, emergency room visits and emergency services fell by 65% for residents. Last week, Juneau conducted its annual point-in-time count of sheltered and unsheltered people. Those numbers won't be available until later in the year, but last year's count recorded 235 people who are homeless in Juneau. Last month, 45 middle school students from throughout Southeast attended ANSEP's two-week science and engineering camp. About a quarter of those kids came from Wrangell's Stikeen Middle School. KSTK's Laura Helgeson has more from Wrangell.
15 Stikeen Middle School students applied to attend ANSEP up in Anchorage. Out of those 15, 13 were chosen to attend. I asked three of those kids what they had learned on their excursion. Will Ashton?
We learned about seismology, which is the study of earthquakes. We learned about earthquake engineering and tsunami engineering. And we did engineering with windmills as well.
Timothy Garcia.
We learned about everything in a computer, how to repair it, how to create it, the software development of inside of it.
And Clara Waddington.
And we dissected squids, and we learned about scat from seals, and it was really fun.
ANSEP stands for the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program. It aims to point students, particularly Alaska Natives, onto career paths in the sciences. They achieve this through various services and camps like this one. The schedule was intense. There were field trips, lectures, and the kids say they barely got sleep or time to use their phones. Here's Clara again.
Well, it wasn't even because I wanted to, like do things on my phone, like social media or anything, but I didn't have enough time to call my parents or my friends, and so I had to call my mom, say bye, just call my dad, say bye, and call Mara and have a little bit of conversation with her and then say bye.
Despite the vigorous activity and curriculum, the kids all had a blast, and when asked if they wanted to go again,
I would definitely go again because it was so fun and I really enjoyed going and making new friends.
I probably would because you could get credentials for college. Like one girl went and she already had a bachelor's degree by the time she graduated.
Definitely. And I learned that their college is really cool because I want to go to their college because it has so many things I want to learn, like Japanese and coding.
Winston Davies teaches middle school math and science and chaperoned the trip.
He said it was more than just about science, but also the possibilities that were open to the students.
And it highlighted students who were taking advantage of the program, and, you know, they're at high school, students with 40, 50, 60 college credits, and these kids are still in high school. So I think after that, like, they're, like, hearing testimony from some of these kids that have been in the program, it really opens some of the Wrangell kids' eyes, for sure.
In Wrangell, I'm Laura Helgeson.
And I'm Angela Denning. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. Thanks for listening.